The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Jennifer Zamparelli, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's nice to have a body in the studio with me. And you're back on our screens at the moment with quiz show, Home Advantage, which nice, good, clean Saturday evening
good,
fun.
But
I gather there was a
fun.
Child dropped an F-bomb on you.
Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah, we had this young fella from, I don't want to say where he's from in case they cut it out, but... He dropped the F-bomb and disappeared on me halfway through the show. So because I have three contestants in the studio, their families are at home helping out on big screens.
Okay.
So every now and then they kind of call to the family to help them answer questions. And we went to the family and he was gone. He went to the Jacks. He was like, I'm out of here. I've
had
enough of this.
Are they continuing family life or people in and out to the Jacks answering the door and all that kind of stuff?
No, where
television.
They shouldn't be.
Okay,
they should be sitting still ready for the question. I mean, it's only 36 minutes or something, the whole thing. But it's great because it's a great snapshot into families around the country, single parents and mixed race. And it's great to see all these, you know, different families around the country from Kerry to Cork to Dublin to Roscommon, all over the place. So it's great. And there's a lot of kids, really, really smart kids. And really funny kids, and I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, it's good fun.
And presumably the reason that the families are at home, like, it's making a virtue of a necessity, but this is because of COVID and everything.
Yeah, it's COVID friendly, but it's not a COVID show, so to speak. I mean, this
thank God for that. I think we're over that now at this stage.
Listen, I'm over it a long time, but so hopefully this, you know, can still continue. You know, yeah, but it's great to have the option to have, you know, they can call on their families when they need to. And it's great fun. I've always kind of wanted to do a quiz, funny enough. I've always wanted to be in that space, but never had the opportunity. I did a pilot for a quiz years ago and that never, you know, got off the ground. So when I was asked to do this, I was delighted.
Yeah. And speaking of COVID-friendly broadcasting,
were you
broadcasting on the radio from your toilet at home or something?
Not
for a while,
the toilet. No, I was in the young fella's bedroom. I was in my youngest child's bedroom for months. And initially it was quite scary. I was like, I don't know if I can do this because, you know, unlike this Mickey Mouse show, Brendan, we're 3 hours.
Yeah. And you were on your own in the bedroom as well.
Like, I was on my own, I was like, oh, how am I going to do 3 hours? But it actually helped me become a better presenter, I think, because, you know, when I'm doing the show, I have to do the desk, all the bringing in the news and all that. So when I was in the bedroom, I had to really listen. So I became, I think, a better listener. And I think I needed that to be better at my job.
Yeah.
So when I went back into studio, I think I became, you know, better, you know, broadcaster, worse on the desk, but I think I'm forgiven for that.
But
sometimes.
But if you're sitting at home in a bedroom, presumably the two kids, they were around the house somewhere as well,
Yeah.
And then your husband is an actor and a stuntman.
Well, he's a stuntman, yeah. So obviously his business was decimated, you know, especially in the first lockdown. So he was home quite a bit.
Okay.
But he'd forget. And he'd be shouting up the stairs at me.
Yeah.
And the kids would be coming in. I remember, you know, I was in an interview, quite a serious interview. And my son kind of burst into the bedroom with his soother in his mouth and his blanket. He was like, get out. You know, I want to have my snooze now. Yeah, I was like, I'm live to the nation. No, that was tricky. But it was handy in some ways because I play two songs and I put a wash on.
I like it.
You know, I'd play like Fontaine's DC, which goes on forever. And I'd go downstairs and have a coffee. You know, there were perks. There were definitely perks of working from home. I got into that rhythm.
Yeah. OK, I'm going to fight for my right to put a wash on when I'm in here as well. If you can do it, I should be allowed to do it.
Totally.
And come here, tell me then, on a serious note, when did the panic attack start then?
Oh, it was very early on in the lockdown. Because I turned 40 and it was weird because I had so much planned to kind of get me over the fact that I was trying to
distract yourself.
Yeah, totally. It was total distraction. I had a trip to Paris with Leo. I had a family holiday to Lanzarote. Like, there's six of us, so we would never all be, you know, able to go on holiday with kids and all. So that was one thing that was happening in the year. I had a big party planned, dinners planned, but then that all stopped. So I kind of just had to sit with my 40-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sit with my 40-year-old self and go, oh my God, am I happy? Where am I in my life? Do I like what I'm doing? You know, I was asking myself some really, really big questions, which was odd, but I was having a real physical response. I didn't feel stressed, Brendan. I didn't lose sleep, but I couldn't catch my breath. And this was going on for months. And I was like, will you just go and get it seen to? And then I was on air and I'd have to pull down the mic because I was panicking a little bit. But I didn't feel it. It was a really odd thing. I didn't feel it. It was a really physical thing. And then I finally went to speak to a therapist, you know, after months of saying, I'd be grand. Went to see a therapist and it really helped. Like, I hated talking about myself, weirdly. I felt quite self-indulgent. I felt I was wasting her time. Mm. I felt there's a lot of people who are in worse situations. I'm really happy. I have a lovely husband. I love my kids. I love my job. You know, I shouldn't feel like this. So that took a while to get over. And, you know, she was like, my therapist was like, you absolutely need to be here. You know, this is affecting you physically, whatever. But I still found that very I felt very self-indulgent talking about my panic attacks.
I'd say people would be surprised because, you know, I don't say this in a negative way, but you'd be viewed as being a tough enough kind of character. And I'd say your self-image as well is that you're tough enough cookie, isn't it?
Maybe. I've always dealt with stress quite well in my life, you know, from running a business to a breakfast show to all that stuff. I tend to deal with, I kind of thrive in a stressful environment. But this was different. This was like, it was like I didn't know myself anymore. It was like I've turned 40. I was asking myself questions like, what even music do I like now, you know? Yeah. Am I a good parent? Should I be doing this? You know, time is running out now. I'm on the other side. Should I be spending all my time in work? Should I be living in a, you know, house in the country, you know, growing veg with my children?
So the midlife crisis.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you gave up Twitter as well. Was that part of all of that? Yeah.
It was. I was just tired of looking at people arguing on Twitter. It wasn't really that I was getting trolled or anything like that. It was just the feeling I was getting after I was on it. Yeah. So I was thinking about it. And it was probably, people are saying that you're a business person. That is the worst business decision ever to make. 100,000 followers just one day, willy nilly, just go, see ya. If you want to, you know, follow me, I'm over on Instagram putting up pictures of trees. So it was, but I'm a bit like that. I'm a bit hasty, but I don't regret it. I don't regret coming off Twitter. And it's funny because in this job, you kind of think, well, I kind of need to be on Twitter find out what's going on. But it comes to me anyway.
All the
weird and wonderful stuff I hear about it anyway, not being on that social media platform. So
funny you say about Instagram, because, you know, there was this narrative that Instagram is a kinder space and everything. I hear a lot of people now recently saying that they feel that Instagram can be quite damaging as well.
It depends who you follow. I did a huge clear out of that as well. And I stopped following people who kept selling me stuff and made me feel bad, to be honest with you. And because a lot of positive stuff on Instagram as well. You know, there's a lot of people doing some really good body positive stuff as well. I don't know if you're talking about that, you know, aspect of it. So I did a whole clear out and I put a timer on my Instagram so I wouldn't mindlessly be scrolling, wasting time. And I think the biggest thing, I didn't want my kids looking at me being on my phone.
Yeah.
Because then I have no argument when I want her to come off her tablet, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I put a timer of 20 minutes. So I have a little timer that pops up and tells me, bing, you're done for the day. And that kind of helped, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know this as well. You were bullied as a kid as well, kind of quite badly, were you?
Yeah, it was in primary school. I don't know if it put me off school, But that was a real physical thing as well, because that was, you know, young ones waiting at the gate for me to, you know, have a scrap. But then it was kind of, it was a girl in the area, so it was kind of everywhere I went, you know, if I went down to the shops
and they were beating you up.
It was physical a lot of the times, yeah. Yeah. And then funny enough, when I got my first job in the Howth Lodge Hotel, I don't know if you remember that hotel, as a
I do not.
Chambermaid, she was there. She worked there. And I absolutely panicked, but she didn't remember me. I don't know if she chose not to remember me or she didn't want to or whatever it was. But I still had that feeling, you know, that fear. And it's my biggest fear with my kids. You know, I talk to Florence because she's six. I talk to her about it all the time, about being, you know, if you could choose to be right or be kind, you know, in school. Or her being the bully, which would be even worse. So I think it's a conversation we need to have really early on with kids, because nobody's immune to it. I mean, it happened to me because of a coat I was wearing. You know, it could happen to the most popular kid, a sporty kid. It doesn't, like, nobody is excluded from it. It's just luck of the draw.
Does it leave a mark on you? If that happens at a formative kind of age, does it kind of change you a bit?
I wanted out of where I lived fairly quick. I mean, I went to New York fairly quickly after school. I just wanted to get away, I suppose, and start over.
Yeah.
I never liked school, unfortunately, because that's one of my regrets. I would have loved to gone to university maybe and had that experience. But I never pushed myself or excelled in school. I just wanted out.
Yeah, but then you became this real grafter, didn't you? I'd say you put a lot of pressure on yourself. You've done all these different things. You've lived a life, like, which a lot of broadcasters, I think, haven't. And you've lived a life out in the real world. But it sounds like you've always, like, pushed yourself to be excellent and give it everything, have you?
Just to make money, really. I remember my mom saying to me, not in a, you know, an ego way, but, you know, we're a working class family. You know, we didn't have a lot. We had to work for everything. My first job was when I was 13 in Baldoyle swimming pool at the desk while my dad, doing a second job because he's a guard, taught the locals how to swim. So we always worked hard. We always, and that was it. If you work hard, you know, you get to where you want to get to. And that was always instilled in me. And fortunately, I always enjoyed what I did and then fell into sales, and that taught me a lot about hard work.
Yeah. And then the apprentice, that was out of the sale. You were in sales at that stage. And that was kind of, I know you'd done a bit of drama and stuff, but the apprentice was your foray into more public stuff, yeah?
Yeah, people always ask me, oh, did you want a profile when you did the apprentice? I mean, people who know me, I mean, that just wasn't the case. I mean, I was in a sales job. I was looking at the apprentice going, I can do that. And I wanted out of the job I was in. So I applied and I got through, and it was really exciting. But I was in for the land of my life when I realised what that world, reality TV world, was at the time. And it was frightening. I remember being on The Apprentice and waking up at 6 a.m. and literally there was a cameraman, this man, standing over me with a camera in my face. You know, and it was scary. I thought, hang on, should they be asking, you know, is this how it's going to be? It was an awful experience, but I wouldn't change it because it was a stepping stone to where I got to. But I have a real thing about reality TV now, and, you know, these people going into it, they just need to be minded and they need to have full disclosure of what actually is going to happen. You know?
Were you damaged by it? Like, because you did become a kind of a, I won't say a hate figure, like, but you were the kind of villain you love to hate kind of person, weren't you?
There's this phrase knocking around, right? It says, she describes herself as an iron fist in a velvet glove, right? I have never said that. I think Margaret Thatcher used that once. And I was known as the Ice Queen in the Ice. Because I was so terrified to say, I didn't say anything. I couldn't even smile. And I had no sleep. There was a pantry full of whiskey and Skittles, so we weren't fed properly. It was just a really odd experience, and I wanted out. I really wanted out. And then after I had an experience of coming out of a nightclub, so then I felt the brunt of the, you know, the paparazzi in the UK just me, just a contestant on The Apprentice, and I had a cameraman put his camera up my skirt to try and get a shot when I came out of a club after the show. Like, that's frightening, you know? It's just been made illegal and people will be arrested for that. But back then, it was a free-for-all.
Yeah, of course, that was the heyday when the tabloids were probably at their worst, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, scary stuff.
And but then, you see, as I say, you've all that life experience and that is probably what you bring to your radio show is 2 years old now, isn't
it? 2 years in June. I can't believe I'm still there.
Yeah, I didn't know it was the first show on 2FM since Gerry Ryan where they kind of opened up the phone lines and it was caller-based.
Yeah. It was the first time we'd given out that number. So it was a scary space to be in, to be honest. A lot of pressure. But, I mean, if I had 10% of his success, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
But I suppose, I mean, Dan came to me, Dan Healy, the head of 2FM, and said, look, I think this could be your space. And I didn't believe him initially. Self-doubt. And we did a couple of tests and I felt more comfortable. But I mean, I'm a completely different broadcaster now than I was back then. I'm so comfortable in that studio, in that space. And initially I was so afraid to talk to people because I was like, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
Oh my God, they could say anything. Yeah, you know, I'm not trained for this. You know, I'm sure I'm going to get, you know, sued or sacked. But it's... When they started calling in, I felt more comfortable, and it's actually where I feel most comfortable with callers, with people, random people. I mean, they make the show. But I did learn very, very early on that I have to give a little bit more of myself.
That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. Like I know all kinds of kind of fairly intimate things about you because guess that's the deal, isn't it? I
that's
know them
the
because
gig.
You've told everybody. Yeah.
I am a mouth. I don't hold back really. And that's probably why it suits me. But I think from a listener point of view, then they feel that they can share. And
is there anything you regret telling people or anything? Do you ever come out and go, why did I do that?
On air.
Yeah.
We were talking about regrets and I said I regretted getting my tubes tied.
Yeah.
And my husband called me and was like, sorry, what? We discussed this. You know, we were in a consultant's office discussing this while we were having our second child. We both decided we just wanted two kids. And I was kind of like, I'd want to like to gone again, you know. And I was very, I was very open on air. And sometimes I lose myself a bit. But it was a big regret for
and
me.
That's how your husband found out?
Yeah.
Okay. So you never talked about it afterwards. Did you feel you couldn't, like, is it
well,
such a
it was
big
done.
That, yeah, yeah,
it
yeah,
was
yeah.
done. And it's unlike... when men get the snip, which is very easy to reverse, when if you get your tubes tied, it can be done, but it's a huge operation and IVF. And he always wanted two kids because he is one of two, but I'm the youngest of six. And I'm like, well, law of averages here. What if they don't get on? You know, if we have another one, at least, you know, there's backup there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm used to a big family. I like big families. It was the best thing in hindsight, but I probably would have tricked him into having another one, Brendan, to be honest with you.
Did he also find out about you having a little bit of Botox? He found that out on air as well, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Had he not noticed, no?
Not at all. He doesn't know when I get my hair done. He doesn't know when I had that done. He doesn't know.
But if you suddenly came home looking as if your face had been ironed, like,
see,
you think
I do a very good job,
really,
Brendan.
Yeah,
I see
stuff.
A very good guy and I have very little, you know, done. So there's a lot he finds out on air. And he doesn't mind. Thank God.
Yeah.
He knows that's the nature of the beast. We got him on air once and it was a disaster.
Why?
Because he got so nervous. I think he felt the pressure.
Yeah, okay.
It just wasn't his... Which is funny because he would talk to anybody.
Yeah, well, listen, it's good you say that so people realise that this isn't all as easy as it sounds. It's not just about chit-chatting.
Yeah.
There's There's a skill, some other skill.
Well,
to
I haven't got to that skill yet, but I'm working on it.
it's funny you say the nature of the beast, because I suppose if you're going to play that the game that you play, a lot of writers do it and stuff, where you're going to share stuff, you are going to kind of sell out at times and annoy everyone around you and stuff. And like your parents now and again are going to be like, oh my God, you've disgraced us and stuff.
I haven't gone that far with, oh God, I don't know. They're listening now in the car on the way to Supervalu. So I better be careful. But if my mom hears her name, if she was like, she texts me straight, what are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Would you be glad that you got to mention they have a sponsorship deal with Supervalu, obviously?
Oh, there we go,
nice work.
Other shops are available. Yeah.
Did I read that Dancing with the Stars is coming back?
Brendan, I'm the last person to know.
Of course,
as you know, I have a big mouth. The last I heard was they had to pitch for the show. So they had to put a pitch in. And we'll hear in the next couple of weeks.
Reported that it is coming back. But
has it? Oh,
well, Larry Bass is very good at, the guy who runs the company. He's very good at publicity, isn't he? So
he's very good at that. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm not back. Who knows? You know, you just don't know with
of
these things.
Of course you will be.
Brendan, my relationship with Orsi, it's like that boyfriend you go out with for years. Sometimes they cheat on you. You know, they never fully commit. And that's me and RTE. You know, I'm waiting for the ring.
You see, that's a thing you have, obviously, from everything you've done down the years. There's a freelancey kind of mentality that never goes away, is there, where you always that slight insecurity, yeah?
Well, it's not my insecurity. I mean, that's down to, you know, if they give me a longer contract and, like I said, give us the ring. I love being freelance. I love having that little bit of independence,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Another piece of work you did, which for me, I have to say, is kind of your masterpiece, which is Bridget Naiman. I believe during the pandemic, it was a pandemic sleeper hit, was it? And you have a whole new audience.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw on Instagram that I got this huge influx of followers from the States. And I think it does really well abroad. I get so many messages from people abroad saying they love it and they really enjoyed it and all that kind of stuff. So that's great. You mean, I would love to revisit that at some stage. But I haven't seen Jason or Bernard in a long time. Hopefully we can sit in a room. I have this vision where I want them to go sleep in 1989 and wake up in 1990. Different ways.
This is Bridget Naiman, not Bernard.
Definitely not Bernard. And just do the 90s. But we'll see. Because every time I did, I mean, every time I look back at Bridget Naiman, it was always it was a really tough slog. Because I was always either pregnant or just had the baby and we were writing and producing and it was just full on. You know?
So it's kind of, there's a reeling in the years aspect to it that you feel you could do the 90s now. And
I think so.
Yeah.
I think people would want to see that.
Maybe the noughties as well, you know.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So come here, is midlife crisis sorted now, do you think?
Do you know what? I don't know. It probably comes in waves. I've learned to deal with it a lot better. And it sounds so cliche, but getting out into nature really helps. Sitting with myself, I can do that a lot better now.
Yeah.
And I'm very good at saying no now to things where before, like in my 20s and 30s, I would not, like, even with work, you know, when I had Florence, I was back in work after 10 weeks because there was no way I was going to jeopardize a new radio show, you know, just because I had a baby as well. You know, I was going to do everything and I could do everything. Looking back, I probably would have taken longer. But Bernard O'Shea always said to me, he said, I'll give you one piece of advice with radio. He said, never go on holiday.
Yeah, but it's a tough way to live though, isn't it? So
do you
feel you missed out there, like for example with Florence, yeah?
If I had my time, I always say to Lottie, because Lottie obviously is pregnant and expecting her little boy and she's always asking for advice and I never give it to her because I'm like, you have to find your own way. Everybody's different and you'll get so much advice. I said, don't make any decisions and just go on your gut. I was lucky that Leo was able to help out so much, but, you know, it was tough. It was tough leaving a newborn baby when you're breastfeeding and going into work to do a breakfast show. But we got through it. and it all worked out in the end. Hopefully.
I'm good. So I'm glad we that arc came to a happy ending. And listen, he's now back to stunting and acting
as
well.
Yes. Oh, unfortunately, yes.
Life in the Zamparelli household.
Flying
is
off. All back
normality
to normal.
Resuming. Yeah. Okay, excellent. And listen, Home Advantage continues on RT1 on Saturdays at 8:25. Watch out for bad language there. Jennifer Zamparelli, thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.